Welcome to the True Tales by Disability Advocates, authentic voices of people thriving with disabilities, where individuals use the art of storytelling to change the world. The True Tales by Disability Advocates podcast is produced by ArtSpark Texas Speaking Advocates Program. Keep listening to hear how life's challenges can spark a desire to speak out and advocate for themselves and others.
Welcome to True Tales by Disability Advocates podcast, the Love Has No Limits bonus episode in honor of Valentine's Day. A team of disability advocates creates the True Tales to give voice to the personal stories and lived experiences of disabled storytellers. We offer our unique and often underrepresented perspective to the growing community of podcasters worldwide. Love and romantic relationships can bring us the greatest joy in our lives, but at the same time, they can bring our most difficult challenges. I once heard someone say, relationships put Miracle-Gro on our issues. For folks with disabilities, there can be added layers of complications. In this episode, we bring you a love story and ask you to consider how a spiritual practice of mindfulness and love with no limits might change how you interact with people with disabilities you encounter. Host Jennifer Howell introduces married couple Dave and Kate Chapel. They are our first guests for whom speak is not their primary way to express themselves. They communicate using augmentative and alternative communication devices, ACC devices, such as text-to-speak technology and voice synthesizers. Because of the limitations of communication device technology, Kate and Dave chose to prepare their answers in advance. Even so, there are often long silences in the conversation, and this is especially true when using eye tracking to navigate the equipment. In our recording sessions, we allowed time for them to respond at their natural pace, but we chose to edit these silences in the final recording to fit the flow of the podcast format. However, you may notice more silence than usual. We did this to honor the essence of this form of communication. We have also left in the beeps that sprinkle these conversations as the equipment moves along. Wherever possible, I have also indicated them with a beep in the transcript. For the final question in Kate's interview, she wanted to add to her planned response, but is concerned that her listeners who are not familiar with her vocal style may not be able to understand her. So she asks episode producer Kristen Gooch to interpret. Kristen is familiar with supporting Kate in this way because they've worked closely for the last year on a team project. You'll hear Kate's voice for the beginning of the response and Kristen's voice for the details lost in the recording process. In her story, My Journey with Religion, Kate picks up on the themes of episode 3, Community, Faith, and Inclusion, and tells of her early experiences in church communities. She points out that well-meaning folk with good intentions still need to be mindful of ableism underlying their message and in the language they choose. In the second half of the show, Dave reveals the lengths he was willing to go to be with Kate, the love of his life. His story, My Life in a Nursing Home, shows how he used humor to get through an inconvenient, complex situation. But the story also leaves the listener outraged at the absurdity of a system that often controls the life of folks with disabilities. True Tales by Disability Advocates harnesses the power of storytelling to build community with peers and hopes to develop empathy in others. Whether you are listening to this episode on Valentine's Day or week or at another time of the year, ask yourself if you have the courage to live and learn in all areas of your life as if love has no limits.
Our first guest, Kate Chapel, is here to share her story, My Journey with Religion. Welcome, Kate. Before you begin, Would you tell our listeners what led you to the Speaking Advocates program?
I used to be a part of Actual Lives with Art Spark. It was formerly known as ESA Arts. Then, when Day of God hooked up with Speaking Advocates, I decided to join. I really enjoyed Actual Lives, so I thought it would be fun to be in Speaking Advocates. And it was.
Oh, thank you so much, Kate. We are looking forward to hearing your story. Please share with us.
I was born into a Baptist family, the youngest of three daughters. My first memory that involved worship was at a camp I attended for children with disabilities at around 6 years of age. Camp was 2 weeks long, and on Sundays they had a religious service. I did think much of it. I just loved watching the sign language interpreters. The idea of a God and Jesus was a concept I could not comprehend at that age, and unfortunately, I wouldn't comprehend this or believe in God for a long time. Sure, my grandmother on my dad's side of the family taught me the words to Yes, Jesus Loves Me, but it was just a song. Just like some songs I like on the radio today, I don't really know what the lyrics are saying, but I still love the melody. My family attended church every Sunday. I dreaded the thought of going. My mom getting me all dressed up, and oh, the torturous thought her curling my hair with the curling iron. 99% of the time, God could not save her from burning my ears or forehead. Because of this, I began to equate church Sundays with torture. Then once I suffered through the dreaded curling iron, I had to face the looks and pat on the head with the poor little handicapped girl in the wheelchair phrase. I developed this hatred against religion. If these people claim to be loving Christians, followers of our Heavenly Father, why were they treating me like I was some kind of freak? This was the attitude I had most of my younger years, but God did shine through a few times. Somewhere in my middle school years of attending Sunday school, there was a boy in my class who befriended me. I am not sure why he was so accepting of me, but he had a great godly spirit. I could not wait to go to Sunday school to spend time with him. To me, spending time with the one person at church who saw me for more than my disability brought me closer to God. Unfortunately, my only church friend moved away and I stopped going to Sunday school. It was around that dark time when my parents separated, which led to their divorce. During my teenage years, I decided to sleep in until 12:30 on Sundays and forget church. My dad would get me up to the smell of Popeye's chicken and biscuits. That was my religion, and it worked for me. I was trying to fit in and make friends. I finally had success with making real friendships that would last for a lifetime. Unfortunately, most of my friends weren't religious, and we spent a lot of weekends together. So for many years, church and God were not a priority in my life. In my 30s, After many years away from God, I hired an attendant who attended Gateway Church and read the Bible daily. We would have many long debates about Jesus. We debated if the Bible really was the Word of God. It was written so long ago and translated 1,000 times. How was I supposed to believe this old book about a guy who would perform miracles? So he could make me walk and take my disability away. But what if I didn't want to be healed? Think about it. I'd be disabled 1 minute and perfectly normal the next. But my normal, was me. I would be so freaked out in my new normal that I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I had a million questions and I finally agreed to go visit Gateway for answers. Also around this time, another wonderful Gateway member became my attendant. After she worked for me a couple of months, she invited me to her small group. She would take me to her small group every week, even though she wasn't getting paid for taking me. I think it was her goal to show me who God was and how He loved me. She was successful. We started going to Gateway most Sundays, but this time there was no curling iron. Over time, I grew more and more to trust in God and realized He had been with me all my life. I was just blindsided by distractions and God couldn't find access into my heart. One day in March, my boss informed me that my wonderful job with the school district, working with students who use communication devices, would be coming to an end at the end of the school year. I remember that day like it was yesterday. My boss told me I could have the rest the day off. Suddenly, I looked at him and said that would be silly. I had students to help that day. I knew at that hard moment that God was with me and would open other doors for me to help children like me. It was at this moment that I truly saw where God would lead me. He would lead me wherever He wanted me to go, as long as a curling iron was nowhere in sight.
Welcome back. I'm here again with Kate. Kate, thank you. We are so grateful to you for sharing your story. You said that you received looks and pats on the head from people at your church. You said, poor little handicapped girl, when they saw you. And you mentioned that they treated you like you were some kind of freak. What else did they do that made you feel uncomfortable or hurt? I know that there are many well-meaning people who are listening today who are unaware that their actions and their words may be hurtful. So perhaps when they know better, they will do better. So please enlighten us.
From what I can remember, since it was over 30 years ago, I thought to myself I could understand why people excluded me at school, after school activities, or in other settings. However, my family always told me people who went to church were loving, caring, and accepting of one another because they were all children of God. My experiences of church were quite the opposite, especially when I went to Sunday school. I remember feeling extremely isolated, and my peers almost never interacted with me or included me in group discussions. At least when I went to school and to the general education classrooms, I had an assistant teacher who accompanied me, and they helped to facilitate my classmates' interactions with me. Plus, unlike my general education teachers, my Sunday school teachers had no clue on how to include someone with a disability in their lessons. So in an ideal situation, I believe Sunday school teachers could be equipped with the knowledge on how to include children who have disabilities into their lessons. More importantly, be informed about the individual's accommodation needs for them to participate in lessons. Maybe the children in the class could learn them as well. I feel this could have been very helpful in my circumstance.
Yes, thank you. And about the boy who befriended you when you were about middle school age at church, you said that he made you feel accepted. And I'm wondering, what was it that he did that made you certain that he saw you for more than your disability?
Honestly, I don't remember how he went about befriending me. My guess is he might have had a family member who had a disability because he was very comfortable hanging out with me outside of Sunday school. I remember that I went to my first login at our church because he could help me with most of the things that I require physical assistance with. A lock-in is when your parents dropped you at about 6 o'clock at night and then they didn't pick you until late the next morning. The church staff took the kids to Chuck E. Cheese Pizza at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was only for the kids from our church who were there. I remember having the time of my life that night. For once in my life, I felt the Spirit of God in someone who was a churchgoer. It gave me hope that God is in the picture and churchgoers really did lead the walk of Jesus. However, after he left, things went back to the same way for me, being isolated and not included in church events. I eventually stopped attending Sunday school as it was more harmful than helpful to my spiritual needs.
Oh, yes, I can see that. Well, you mentioned when you were older, in your 30s, that you had many discussions and debates, I guess, with your attendant. One of the topics was that God could take your disability away, that you would no longer need a wheelchair. But you asked, maybe God didn't want you to be. There are many well-meaning Christians who have made others feel inferior because of their disability, or maybe less than, or like there was something wrong with them. What does it feel like to be the recipient of pity or the subject of prayers for healing?
When people tell me they will pray for me, I think to myself, what are they going to pray for? I am pretty well off. I'm not sick with any kind illness that I need to recover from. I have cerebral palsy. I don't know a life without it. From my perspective, the whole notion of being healed just by touching Jesus would be very unsettling to me. I say this, I mean, to be disabled for all of my life and suddenly became able to walk would be a shock to my whole sense of being. I would have to have serious counseling to cope my new life. I know people mean well by praying for me. However, I feel it is kinda a cop-out because it's easier for people to pray rather than get to know how they could support me.
Oh, that was so good. Very helpful, I think. I mean, that's what this is all about. You know, people people said things to my mom and said things to me that they probably had no idea that they were hurting our feelings or making us angry. They didn't know. And so I don't want to be guilty of that too. Well, Kate, what you have revealed today about your experience has educated us. And for that, we are very grateful. Your story was so good at making us think about our words and actions towards persons with disabilities, even when we go to church. Well, now I know, and I want to do better right now. Will you please share with our listeners what you are working on and how they may follow you?
I am working with my eyes.
I didn't want to jump in the middle of the interview. Do you want support in what you just said?
Yeah.
Okay, Kate is working for Training for Transformation at Imagine Art. She is the point person for Channels for Self-Advocacy. She also has a blog.
Thanks again, Kate.
Being there, my blog has been
okay, stay with us for our second story. When Dave Chappell shares his own tale of when he needed to spend time in a nursing home, I'm inspired by the courageous choices. He was very courageous. He had this really difficult decision to make, and he did what he had to do. Welcome back to the podcast, Changing the World One Story at a Time. We just heard from Kate Chappell, and now we will meet her husband, Dave. Welcome, Dave. Before you share your story with us, would you please tell our listeners, what was it that led you to the Speaking Advocates Program?
Way back in 2013, I learned about a new writing program at VSA. Now Art Spark, where it gave participants the opportunity to become self-advocates by writing personal stories. This program eventually became opening minds, opening doors, and eventually became speaking advocates.
Thank you so much. We cannot wait to hear your story.
Have you ever done something in your life that you didn't want to do, but you knew it was for the best? Or were you ever been confused about whether go with your heart or listen to so-called professionals? Don't those situations just suck? The story I am about to share is about one of those situations I had to live through, but the outcome was worth it. I moved to Austin from Cleveland in April 2012 to be with my fiancée, Kate. My best friend Mike drove me and my two dogs in a big moving truck across the country, with my van being towed behind. Mike said it was like driving a tank with a white elephant pulling us from behind. When I left Ohio, I lost my Medicaid benefits, and I was told by some here the fastest way to get Medicaid was to go into a nursing home. I put off going into the nursing home for about 7 months because people, Kate included, said there were other ways for me to get Medicaid. This was so very frustrating because I was being pulled in all kinds of different directions, and I didn't know whose advice I should take. I had to ask myself, should I be listening to the love of my life, Kate, whose advice was getting me nowhere fast? Or should I listen to professionals who were pushing me to do something I absolutely dreaded and, frankly, something very scary for me? I struggled with this, and there were times I was ready to be admitted, but literally at the last minute it was postponed, either because a piece of paperwork was missing or due to my not wanting to be in a nursing home during the holidays. I was ready to be admitted the beginning of November 2012, thinking I would be out in plenty of time to go on a Christmas vacation that Kate's family had planned, but I would find out that wouldn't be the case, and I decided to wait until after the holidays. This was becoming a sore topic with everybody because my life started to be at a standstill and nothing was moving forward. Finally, on January 3rd, 2013, I admitted myself into a nursing home. The other residents were almost all 60 years old or older. I was afraid to breathe too hard on them because most looked so frail a light breeze would knock them to the ground. But there were two guys close to my age and we became friends. One of them was named Sheldon, and when we first met, he was wearing a big cowboy hat and he kept asking Kate and me for a race down the hall in his bright new shiny wheelchair. The other guy was named Ricky and he was shy and quiet at first, but when I got to know him, I quickly found out he was a cool and interesting guy. Ricky is a huge Dallas Cowboy fan and his room was covered with Cowboys posters. The staff was mostly good to me. I think that was because I had a mind and I could not only tell them my needs, but I could tell their superiors if they were doing something wrong. I had my two favorite aides. They really cared about the residents, and they made sure I received the care I deserved. One was a large African-American guy and he had the kindest heart and he would do anything for me. One of my friends nicknamed him the Green Mile because he reminded her of the John Coffey character from the movie. The second aide became like a little brother to Kate and me because every time he saw us he gave us a big hug and he always took the time to talk and make sure everything was going good. When Kate didn't have an attendant when she was visiting me, they both helped Kate with dinner and they helped us to sit on the couch in the living room so we could have time alone together. Although these two aides were great, there were some bad apples that weren't that caring and I did get some people in trouble. If somebody is unfamiliar with me and they don't know how I eat, it is very difficult to feed me because sometimes I have trouble controlling my mouth. When people don't know better, they think I am playing around with them. On this particular day, the staff was short-handed and I had to wait until an aide was available to come and help me. Of course, the first available aide never fed me before and she had no idea how my mouth worked. People need to be patient and wait for me to open my mouth, and rushing me only makes me more nervous and more spastic. Well, I could see this woman who was going to help me was already stressed because she was talking to herself in tongues I haven't heard in my entire life, and she was hopping around the dining room like a jackrabbit on drugs. When I didn't open my mouth, she started pushing spoonfuls of food in my face and the food got everywhere. I got pissed off and started kicking my feet because I couldn't use my communication device with food being stuffed in my face. When I did that, she threw the spoon down and left me. Many of the staff witnessed the aide's actions and she was reported. As a result, she was suspended and told not to have anything to do with me for the rest of my stay. Although I knew I would eventually get out of the nursing home and except for a few incidents I wasn't being mistreated, it was still frustrating to be in there not knowing how long I had to stay. Because again, people were telling me different things about how long it would take me to get on Medicaid and get the services I needed. First, I was told it would just take 30 days. I thought to myself, okay, a month isn't so bad. Although, I was informed the day before I was going to be admitted that my Medicaid application wouldn't be considered until I was in the nursing home for 30 days straight. Then it could take another 30 to 60 days after that to be approved for Medicaid and my services to start. I was like, what the hell? However, a bright spot was after the first 30 days I was able to spend some weekends at home with Kate. I am glad to say there is a happy ending to this long and painful story. On April 19, 2013, I permanently went home from the nursing home after 107 days with my full Medicaid benefits. Then 43 days after that, Kate and I had our commitment ceremony when we became partners for life.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. We really appreciate that you are willing to share your story with our listeners. It's so unfortunate and disappointing that even today, so many still find themselves forced to enter a nursing home in order to qualify for Medicaid benefits. It happened decades ago. It happened to you in 2013, and to this day, it is still happening. Fortunately, though, there has been at the same time, an increase in types of services that are available, such as dayhab care, group homes, other home health care options. Dave, what types of improvements do you still hope to see?
I really hope they either eliminate or at least raise the income limits for Medicaid. Yes, I do require quite a bit of attendant care, which I am reliant on Medicaid to provide. However, I don't think it should prevent me from working and making a nice living.
Yes, yes, I think we all agree. Now, when you entered the nursing home, you talked about you were the youngest or one of the youngest in the nursing home. How did that make you feel to be one of the youngest in your community? And what can you tell us about the stigma and the awkwardness that might be experienced by persons with disabilities who participate in programs that are designed for and marketed to seniors, to persons over the age of 60 or 65?
I was fortunate there were two other residents close to my age, so we used to hang out together. Plus, the staff enjoyed talking to me because I was closer to their age than the other residents and gave them some entertainment and somebody to vent on when they were stressed. As for programs being designed for older people, actually, I never really thought about it because I have been receiving services since I was 18, so it is just something that helps me to live my life.
Okay, thank you so much, Dave. Thank you for giving us a look into your experience. Your courageous story has not only inspired us, but maybe perhaps it's initiated important conversations about how the health system in our country needs to be improved. I hope so. Will you please tell us what you are working on these days?
Well, I have a couple of jobs that keep me pretty busy. First, I work for the rehabilitation program at Pennsylvania State University, where currently we are working on improving communication between individuals who use communication devices and their medical providers. Then I do peer support with the Training for Transformation program through Imagine Art. I am a part of a team that runs peer support groups over Zoom.
Oh, that sounds like wonderful work. Thank you so much for all you do. And again, we appreciate you so much for being a guest on our program. Beautiful job, Dave. Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You've been listening to episode 4 of True Tales by Disability Advocates. Love has no limits, our bonus episode in honor of Valentine's Day.
Thanks for listening. This show was produced by Kristen Gooch. It is edited and mixed by John Beer and Miss Boyd. Our script and production team includes Joey Gidsey and Toby Altrabolsi. Special thanks to Kate Chappell and Dave Chappell for appearing. I'm this week's host, Jennifer Howell, and you've been listening to the podcast, Changing the World One Story at a Time. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
All episodes of the True Tales by Disability Advocates are free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. The program is funded in part by a grant from the Texas State Independent Living Council, the Administration for Community Living, and individuals like you. To learn about the Speaking Advocates Program, sign up for our newsletter at artsparktx.org. That's artsparktx.org. The free virtual training is open to people of all disabilities, no matter where you live.